Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And away we go. Welcome in. If you're now welcoming in the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio, as it's a new hour, we have some new affiliates, so we appreciate you joining us. And as always, we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. Here for two more hours, a whole lot to do. News brief still to come. Closing bell as well coming up at 9:20 p.m. Eastern. I know we've been talking a lot, and I mean a lot, about the Los Angeles Clippers side of the collapse. We got to give you the Nuggets perspective. And we'll do so with a former player for the Nuggets that won a championship with the Pistons, has been calling Nuggets games for a long time. Scott Hastings going to join us coming up at 9:20 p.m. Eastern. So we're very much looking forward to that conversation 19 minutes from now. Make sure you're listening to us when Barrett Salee will join as well, as we're going to talk about this Big Ten decision as the Big Ten is coming back. At the end of October, they'll be a part of the playoff picture in college football, and hopefully we get through a full college football season. And I think there's a little bit more excitement now with college football, as you were just having the ACC and you were just having the Big 12 play for now. SEC comes back next Saturday to get the Big 10 back in the mix and have four out of the five Power 5 conferences. It is exciting, where last weekend I was watching some of the college football, and I told you yesterday I was watching that Iowa State game where Iowa State did lose and did go down to Louisiana, the Raging Cajuns. And when I was watching that game, even though it was a cool upset, it was a cool moment, I just didn't really have like a great reaction of, oh my goodness gracious, like I love college football as if I did in years past, because there's so many uncertainties to this season. And you don't have everyone all in. And that's all right if you don't want to play. It's totally all right if you don't want to play and if you don't think they should be playing. I don't know what is right. I don't know what is wrong now in 2020 when we're in this era and we're trying to defeat this disgusting virus that is COVID-19. But when you make a decision, sometimes there has to be adjustments. So, for example, if you're the ACC and this doesn't end up working, which hopefully it does, you got to eventually make a call to pull the rug out from underneath the season. For the Big Ten, though, to go from an early August, we're not playing, and now to that quickly change course of actions, yeah, it's great for us. Yeah, it's great to have the Big Ten back. I truly don't get the decision. I don't. And you could tell me, you know, there's better medical information now. You could tell me that you have better testing protocols. Is that really believable, or was it more so that you feared the other three conferences in the Power Five completing their season? And then for you, it was a situation where you're afraid that you're going to look like you guys got it wrong. And then also the dinero has to follow it as well. So we'll get back into the Big Ten conversation with Barrett Salee coming up at 8:20 p.m. Eastern, 5:20 p.m. Pacific. I got to get to, though, what is the biggest story of the day. And we've been hitting this from so many different angles. It's the Clippers and it's the Nuggets. You all know Clippers are up 3-1, looked like they were well on their way to giving us what we thought was going to be the Western Conference Final all throughout the year. Lakers and Clippers, LeBron, Kawhi, Anthony Davis, Paul George, and that's what I thought was going to happen. And I'd be lying to you. I would not be being truthful with the audience. I would be like Paul George last night trying to tell you it wasn't championship or bust this season. If I sat here and told you today, oh, down 3-1 when the Nuggets are down 3-1, I thought we would get a game 7, let alone the Nuggets winning Game 7. I thought that thing, that series was over after it was a 3-1 series. I even remember Doc Rivers saying, hey, the series isn't over yet. Don't celebrate us going to the first conference finals yet. And I sat back and I laughed at that. Come on, Doc. I know you got to say that because you're a coach, but this series is over. Turn out the lights. The party is over. Wrap it up. Sayonara. Goodbye. Adios. This series was over. Especially when you had a big lead in Game 5. It's over. Couldn't win Game 5. All right. One game. You know, I'll bounce back. Game 6. Another big lead in Game 6. Clippers got it. Uh-oh. They lost. But still, going into a Game 7 last night, I had a prediction. I thought the Clippers were going to win by 7-8 points. Where it'd be close, and then they would pull away late. And they didn't even get to that point. It was close at halftime, and then in the second half, Denver said, we're showing up, we're playing. This is going to be a fight. You better bring everything you have to knock us off our throne, to knock us off our perch. From what we did in the last series, being down 3-1 and coming back against the Jazz. We'll do that right again. And the Clippers saw that. Clippers heard that. They saw those punches being thrown, and they had zero counterpunch. Zero counterpunch. And not only did they have zero counterpunch, they ran, they hit, and they forgot how to play the sport. That is as embarrassing as it becomes in a big spot, in a big game, where you had three chances to get the dub, and you couldn't get the dub for the Clippers. So now the Clippers go home. And look at the final four that we have. We have the Celtics and the Heat. We saw game one last night. Jimmy Butler, great down the stretch. Bam Adebayo, what a block. One of the better blocks you'll see on Jason Tatum. I'm still trying to figure out how he did it. Heat take a 1-0 lead. Now, Heat take the 1-0 lead. Maybe the Heat get to the finals. I don't think the Heat are going to win this series. Not that they can't. I'm just believing that the Celtics are going to find a way. And with Boston, that's a team you've seen a theme. They have trouble closing out games and reducing the amount of games that they need in a series or that they have to play in a series. You saw the same thing with Toronto, where they had some bad collapses, some bad losses. And last night, they were up 12 in the fourth against the Heat, and the game got to overtime, and then in overtime, they lost. Maybe it eventually catches up. Maybe that could be the difference maker. I do think, though, the Celtics are going to find a way to win this series. I picked the Celtics in six. Maybe after last night, it goes Celtics in seven. You see, though, on the east side, Heat and Celtics. Now, maybe you thought the Celtics would be there. Going into the year, that was a plausible thought. The Heat, no shot. Even though I have a tremendous amount of respect for Jimmy Butler and Eric Spoelstra and Pat Riley, I would have never thought with that roster they were going to the Eastern Conference Finals and also having a 1-0 lead in the Eastern Conference Finals before the year did start. So the East, the big missing team was the Milwaukee Bucks. That's the team that you look back on, you go, how is Milwaukee not there? And then in the West, even though you've seen some teams play well this year at times, Rockets had their run in the regular season. The Nuggets had their run in the regular season. Jazz had their run in the regular season. OKC had their run in the regular season. You kept on seeing those teams. You go, they're good teams. They're not great, though. We're going to see Lakers, and we're going to see the Clippers. Nope. Didn't end up happening. We saw the Lakers get to the conference finals. The Clippers, though, they choked. They choked in a big way. So we think we know everything. We think we know who's going to get where. And in the NFC this year in football, for example, a little less complicated. You know, I think the four teams right now that I think are Super Bowl teams in the NFC going into the season, I said it was the 49ers and the Seahawks, the Bucks, and the Saints. Doesn't mean someone else can't emerge. Packers had a good week one performance. Maybe the Cowboys get their act together. Who knows? But you keep on going through those teams in the NFC, and it's difficult to predict. But in the NBA, it's supposed to be easy to predict. It'd be the Bucks, the Lakers, the Clippers, and then insert another team in the East. And in the AFC this year, it's supposed to be Kansas City. It's supposed to be the Baltimore Ravens. And we keep on trying to figure out who that third team is. I think it's the Steelers. If Ben stays healthy, maybe we don't see Chiefs and Ravens. Just like maybe in the NBA, we were definitely supposed to see Bucks in the finals against either the Lakers or the Clippers, and we're not going to see that. So when we go through all those equations and we even compare it to the NFL, there's a lot of times in sports when you have someone that's so dominant for so many years, whether it's in the NBA, NHL, MLB, or NFL, and anytime they lose or anytime they have a shortcoming, we try to make it bigger than what it is. Not that it's trivial, not that it's not important, but there's sometimes where someone has been great for so long that we expect them to win a championship each and every year, and no one wins a championship each and every year. We've seen it with Tom Brady. He's had some losses. You've seen it with LeBron James. He's had some losses in the last 20 years. Kobe Bryant, the late great Kobe Bryant, he even had to come back from some adversity where they had some dark times in LA before he was able to win two more championships. So whenever someone loses, that is great. When you are great, there is a part of society that roots for you to fail. And when you fail, they go, oh, this guy can never be as good as that guy from a different era. But when we compare them in their own era throughout the years, when LeBron lost to Kevin Durant, oh, Kevin Durant's now the number one player in the sport. When Kawhi Leonard took down the Warriors last year, Kawhi, who already beat LeBron in the past, Kawhi taking down the Warriors, two finals MVPs, Kawhi's the best player in the sport. We go a year later from where we were last year. Who's the best player in the sport? It's not Giannis Antetokounmpo. It's not Kevin Durant. It's not Kawhi Leonard. It's LeBron James. And now LeBron James, I don't want to hear people say, oh, it's too easy for him. Oh, you know what? Even if he wins a championship, it wouldn't have been the same if he had to take down the Clippers and the Bucks. Those are all excuses. Don't take away from what LeBron's doing right now, and he still has two more series to win, because other teams didn't step up and deliver. Because Giannis and the Bucks didn't step up and deliver. Kawhi and Paul George and Doc Rivers didn't step up and deliver. You know who's delivering, though, right now? LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers. They took care of Portland. They took care of the Rockets. Personally, I think this will be a fun series up against the Nuggets. I don't think the Nuggets are winning the series. I think the Lakers are winning in six games. And I do believe right now, as we sit here today, and I believe this even when the Bucks and the Clippers were still alive and still a part of this conversation, that LeBron was winning the championship. When you go with no basketball from March, April, May, June, and you get basketball back at the end of July, and we're in a league of dynamic duos, there's no super teams right now, I'm going with the best player, not only in the sport, but the best player on the planet. And that's LeBron James. May not win most valuable player this year. It's probably going to go to Giannis, but there's a difference between most valuable and the best player. And even through all these ups and downs, even through the Warriors taking him down, the Spurs taking LeBron down, whoever it may be, we tried to have a changing of the guard. Oh, LeBron's not the best player anymore. Still a top three player, but not the best player anymore. He's never going to win another championship again. And I'm not going to talk down to people. I was someone that I said, LeBron, when he went to LA, I didn't think he was going to win a championship. Look good after last year. But the guy has a mission. The guy has a vision. The guy has a plan. And it's working perfectly right now. And don't get me wrong. I got into those conversations. KD, Kawhi. I got into those conversations. I think everyone got into those conversations. But sometimes I think we need to remove ourselves from the in-the-moment thought and just say, you know what? 1 year doesn't define someone. Let's not take away that title that quickly, because all LeBron James has done in his career has been an all-time great. And now he sits there with the final four teams, the Lakers, the Nuggets, the Celtics, and the Heat. There's no doubt in my mind that he's going to win the championship this year. There's no doubt in my mind. Even before we saw the Bucks and the Clippers get eliminated, there was no doubt. Now, There's really no doubt. He's got to win the title this year. Because if he doesn't win the title, then the shortcomings or the criticism that he will receive is fair. And when he lost to the Warriors to try to knock him off his perch, not fair. Going up against Steph. You're going up against Klay, Kevin Durant at times, and also Draymond Green. Your roster wasn't good enough. It wasn't. And he still played his butt off. He still played great. But now he's back in that conversation where he can win a championship. Not only can, he should. And I've said this before, I'll say it again. If LeBron wins the title this year, it's the second most important championship of his career. Nothing's going to top Cleveland. This championship would be more impressive than anything he won in Miami. So we thought that the Bucks were definitely going to be in the finals. They weren't there. I thought the Clippers would be in the Western Conference Finals. They were not there. Now the thought is, no doubt about it, LeBron wins a championship. Go get 8 more wins and go finish the job. And if you do, you won't hear anyone this offseason say Kawhi's better or Giannis is better. Or Kevin Durant is better. It will be the offseason of LeBron and celebrating his greatness once again. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Big Ten coming on back. CBS Insider for college football, Barrett Salee, joins us next.
The Zach Gelb Show is on the air across the nation on CBS Sports Radio. Here's Zach Gelb.
Big Ten football coming back at the end of October. They'll be a part of the college football playoff picture. 8 regular season games, and then each team will play a 9th game as well on conference championship weekend. Big Ten will get set to play October 23rd, October 24th. We'll see what happens with the Pac-12 next. Already have ACC and Big 12 underway, and the SEC makes their triumphant return next weekend. Let's chat a little college football, get all the latest with one of the best people covering college football. Does a tremendous job for CBS Sports, CBS Sports HQ, and Sirius XM College Radio. That, of course, is Barrett Salee. Barrett, thanks for the time. How are you and the family doing?
I'm good, Zach. Hope you and your family are well during these chaotic times. Especially now in the SEC and Big Ten and college football, where we never know what's going to happen the next day.
No, we don't. Let me ask you this, though, because I do follow you on Twitter, and make sure you do follow Barrett on Twitter, at Barrett Salee. Did I see you for your son's birthday actually at a Braves game? How did that happen?
Yeah, so we're season ticket holders, and they have this thing called the A-List, which season ticket holders are a part of, and then other people, if they want to pay to be involved.
Hey, Barrett, we're having trouble hearing you. It sounds like you're on a speakerphone. You're very muffled. You hear us?
How about now?
Now, perfect. There you go. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, so we're season ticket holders, and there's a thing called the A-List where season ticket holders are involved, and you can pay to be involved with it as well. But they opened the Chop House in Wright Field to A-List members. You buy a table for 4 people and meals included. You get to go and enjoy the game. The front glass of the restaurant is closed, so you're glassed off from the field itself. But you're actually in the stadium. It's part of the stadium. You're in there. So I told my now 9-year-old, I said, dude, we're going to get into a game. I don't know how, I don't know when, I don't know why, but we're going to watch the game in person. And, I took him and his best buddy, who also has the same birthday as him. So it was fun. It was really cool.
How many people were there around?
They're all tables of 4. Front were regular tables, back were high tops. I would guess there were probably 20 tables tops per game. That might not even – it may be less than that. So – There was about 20 tables, and you buy tables of 4. I don't know if all of them were full. But, yeah, it's a limited crowd. There's no doubt.
It's got to be bizarre, right? Because we're used to these big raucous crowds, college football, NFL, hockey, basketball, NFL, you know, all these sports that are playing. To basically be there and see not that many people there must have been bizarre, right?
It was weird, but I tell you what, that was a game that Freddie Freeman hit a grand slam.
Nice.
The general manager of the Nationals was ejected, so there was a lot that went on.
Oh, the Rizzo game.
and honestly, it was cool because there was nobody in the stands, but you know, when Freddie hit a grand slam, or I think Ozuna went yard once, it was like a party. It was like we were at an actual game just in one little confined space. So it was definitely weird seeing the stadium without anybody, but in terms of how the crowd reacted and how much fun it was confined in that little restaurant, it did feel kind of normal in a weird way.
Neat stuff. Barrett Salee here with us, covers college football for CBS Sports, CBS Sports HQ. Talking about throwing parties, Big Ten fans today, especially Ohio State, they're throwing parties. Is their sports going to come back at the end of October? So we all know about a month ago, they released the schedule. Then Barrett, they came out less than a week later, said, we're going to postpone the season. We're not going to play in the fall. Was this decision made today? Was it more so made out of fear and also with the decision of money on the mind? Or was it truly about the development in testing and being able to be tested every day?
Anybody who tells you that this is about the advancement of science has no clue what they're talking about. What happened here is really simple. The Big Ten went into pure CYA mode. They knew they made a mistake. They thought they could be a leader. They thought that they could, but they had enough clout to force everybody else to postpone their seasons too. And they wrote off their decision with myocarditis, thinking that this would be enough of an issue to have everybody follow suit. Myocarditis has not changed. It was there last year. It was there 10 years ago. It was there in early August. It's here now. If they try to sell that, if anybody tries to sell that, as a reason, they're an idiot. And then the daily testing thing, go back in early August. We all knew daily early instant turnaround testing was happening. It's not like that's a new development. It's not. Now, they've made it more readily available, obviously, but it's not like the Big Ten couldn't have postponed the season, given themselves a little bit more runway like the SEC did. Really, like everybody else did. The SEC just did made an even longer runway for itself. It's all optics. It's all politics. It's all about the Big Ten realizing it made a mistake and trying to find any possible way to make themselves look less foolish than they already do. And honestly, it's the fact that they came out there and tried to sell this as brand new territory and that they're the trendsetters for all this, it's just a bunch of garbage.
And Barrett Salee, like, once again, I don't know who was in the right. I don't know who was in the wrong when making the decision. But to change that quickly, you know, I would have respected the Big Ten more if they just stuck with their decision. But also the other part of it is I want to get your thoughts on the leadership in the Big Ten, because I can't find it. To come out and make that decision and not really explain why the decision was actually made and just give vague terms and say, oh, it's for the health and safety. You know, I thought that was a brutal job by the Big Ten, and it seems as if the conference just doesn't know what it's doing and they have zero leadership.
No, they have no leadership at all. And it's interesting, Zach, because back in August, they cared immensely about player safety, so they would protect them from myocarditis. But now, suddenly, myocarditis isn't a big deal, and having them rush to play a season before the scheduled spring start is not going to hurt their player safety, because that seems like it's a little more risky than what their plan was initially. So, you know, it's embarrassing. The leadership, it's not just Kevin Warren, but it is Kevin Warren in part. It's the president, obviously, also. But I think in Kevin Warren's spot, in any commissioner's spot, your job is to be a manager. You know, you have to manage the requests and the needs of coaches, athletic directors, and presidents. There are a lot of times where all three of those groups have different needs. And so your job as a commissioner is to manage them. And he didn't. He flat out didn't. And so, it's a big-time lack of leadership. And, again, it's not all on him. It is on the presidents too, but I say this, and I really do not believe it's exaggeration or hyperbole. It takes a lot to make Larry Scott look like a competent leader at the Pac-12, and yet here, this is exactly what the Big Ten is. And go back even further, this makes the Big 12 circa 2011, when all the realignment was going on, look incredibly stable. That's how bad the Big Ten botched this.
It was so confusing because, like I said, in August, they released that schedule. They teased the players because they knew they were going to pull the carpet out from underneath them 6 days later, which what they did. Then you hear these reports, all right, we're going to try to play in the spring, which if they're playing in the spring, and I know we're in alignment here, it would just be a cash grab. Then it's all of a sudden Jan 1 they're going to play, which makes no sense. If you're going to play Jan 1, play in October. Then it's Thanksgiving. Once again, if you're going to play in Thanksgiving, play in October. Had they get to that decision that finally we get that announcement today, okay, the 23rd and the 24th, when was it that that was really put into place? Because it seems as if they were just making everything up on the fly and information was getting leaked out everywhere.
Well, that's the what you just said is exactly how that date came to fruition. They just made it up on the fly. They realized that time was running out. They got to do something. If they want to be in the college football playoff, they got to get started. They got to figure out something to do. So I guarantee you that the entire discussion centering around that date was, okay, if we play 8 games in 8 weeks starting that date, we can get everything in and get a Big Ten championship game in the day before Selection Sunday. But that's the only way that's the only way you can possibly get it in time to be a college football playoff, you know, contender. Because I don't think anything short of 8 games would be anything that the playoff committee would consider. So it's just they're still making it up on the fly. They're trying to make it seem shiny and sell everybody on how great of an idea it is and how much of a trailblazer they are. And it's just, it's a bunch of BS. It's not true. And so, that's all that went on. It's just trying to figure out a way to make it happen quickly and efficiently. And it's a shame because, you know, I think, you've already done some damage to that conference. We did see Wyatt Davis say he was going to try to get back and play for Ohio State this year. There are some other players like Micah Parsons who have signed with agents, so you've already diminished the product that you were going to provide anyway. The way they had this set up, they were bouncing dates back and forth for the last 2, 3, 4 weeks, and then finally it was like, look, guys, we got to go. It doesn't matter. We got to go. We got to do something, and that's exactly why that date exists.
Barrett Salee, what ends up happening with the Pac-12?
Well, it seems like tonight that there's a push to allow Oregon and California to allow practice, which there are teams in California that play in the National Football League that are able to pull up practice, like normal teams. So I don't know why it's not allowed in college. But nevertheless, it sounds like they're trying to explore the ways for that to happen and potentially start the same day that the Big Ten starts, that same weekend. It's a little different, obviously, because there are more, you know, legal loopholes to jump through and state and local regulations to jump through. But I would guess that they are going to do everything they possibly can to follow in the Big Ten's footsteps quickly. And maybe that means starting even a week later and just doing away with the Pac-12 championship game and saying, all right, 8 games, 8 weeks, the last one right before Selection Sunday, and we're done.
We know it wasn't the case with the SEC, but with the ACC and the Big 12, were they ever close to following suit with what the Big 10 and Pac-12 did?
The ACC, no. The ACC and SEC were in lockstep pretty much the entire – well, not in lockstep because the ACC still did make the SEC mad with that whole out-of-conference game and the home state thing, stipulation. But they were basically in lockstep. I think the Big 12 probably handled this better than anybody, because they didn't dig their heels into anything. They didn't say anything publicly. Greg Sankey did a great job because he did the right thing by saying, we're going to get all the information, delay as long as possible to make a decision. The Big 12 just kind of sat there, which to me I think is exactly what should have been done to begin with, is, you know, just don't say anything. Just go about your business. What you need to do at any given time, do it. And when there needs to be a next step, you take that next step, whatever's required. I think the Big 12 did a really good job of that.
Who are your locks for the college football playoff this year?
Clemson, for sure. Alabama, I think, will be there as well. Now that the Big 10 is playing, assuming that, you know, they get 8 games in or there's a minimum requirement that they have to meet or whatever, Ohio State would be in. And then I still have Oklahoma. I know that's boring and bland and chalky. I'm not married to that, though, because if there's an SEC team that, you know, loses and is a one-loss team in Atlanta, is that better than what Oklahoma might provide? I think the Big 12 might have done some more harm last weekend than maybe we thought when the Big 10 hadn't decided to strap it up yet.
Who would be the next two teams? You give me team 5 and 6. Who's team 5 and 6 right now?
Notre Dame.
I think we lost Barrett Salee. All right. Well, good conversation with him. We do appreciate it coming on. I had a few more things, but That's fine. We could end it right there. Notre Dame. I was shocked on that one. Notre Dame. I can't trust Notre Dame. Do we still have Barrett there? Barrett, explain Notre Dame, because that one surprises me.
Yeah, you know, I think they do have issues, trying to figure out who to replace Claypool with. I think the offense kind of sputtered a little bit. But, you know, it's the first game. Again, and Duke, I don't think, is as bad as maybe the reputation sort of, you know, suggests that they are. So I think the offensive line is still super talented. They will get the job done. I think Ian Book maybe dipped his toe into the water a little bit, and that was the right thing to do. I think they're going to have to find a way to run the ball a little bit more effectively with multiple people. But I just think that team, especially with the ACC schedule that they have, really it's Clemson, and that's it. And if they can either weave through there without a loss or find a way to get revenge on Clemson in Charlotte, then I think they have a chance. And then Florida, to me, Kyle Trask might be one of the best quarterbacks in the entire country. I think his upside is tremendous. He's never been a starting quarterback in any offseason at any level. And now, even though it was a disjointed offseason, he got a chance to do that. So, it's in Notre Dame. Even after watching them last weekend and in Florida, I think it's going to be really good.
Well, let me just ask you this, last thing with Barrett Salih. For Ohio State to not make the college football playoff, how many losses would they have to occur?
It could just be one, depending on what that one is and what the impression of the Big Ten is after all of this. So it's going to be interesting to see how they approach that if they do have sort of different number of games and a different perspective. I personally think if they're 8-1 and win the Big Ten championship as one of those eight that they're in, I can't imagine a scenario where they're not. But if they're 7-2 or 8-1 and don't have the Big Ten championship and they lose in Indianapolis, I think they might be on the brink a little bit. I hope they make it. I want to see Justin Fields on that stage again. I really do.
And then last one for you. When Ohio State plays Michigan this year, I know McCaffrey is transferring because he didn't win that competition. What do you think the score is of Ohio State Michigan this year?
Oh, man. I don't think Michigan's offense is going to be good at all. I would say let's go with 33-6.
So typical Harbaugh fashion up against Ohio State. Barrett Salih, great stuff. Appreciate it, my friend.
Yes, Zach. Thanks for having me.
There's Barrett Salih. We'll take a timeout when we come on back. Odell Beckham, a lot of trade conversation. Who are some teams? Is Odell getting traded? Who are some teams that could fit Odell? We talk about that next. First up, though, with the latest CBS Sports Radio update, here's Rich Ackerman.
He's live. He's nationwide on CBS Sports Radio. This is the Zach Gelb Show. Here's your host, Zach Gelb.
CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, is sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. I'll give you an opinion on Odell Beckham in just a moment. Kevin in Honolulu, Hawaii, though, has been holding on patiently. He's next up on the Zach Gelb Show. Kev, go ahead.
Hey, guys, what's going on? By the way, your last guest probably hit it on the head more than anybody I've heard in a while. Where can we follow him at?
Barrett Salih on Twitter, at Barrett Salih. You could just go right to my Twitter, Zach Gelb. It was the last tweet out was his Twitter handle.
Okay, too easy. Hey, so first of all, I think he's absolutely right in the fact that, as usual, the Big Ten had a big head thinking that everybody else was going to fall in line behind him. Obviously, that didn't happen. They have a bunch of egg on their face now, which they're trying to deal with, and they're dealing with poorly. From a political standpoint, what I was talking about is if you look at the Pac-10 and the Big 12 and where – Pac-12, excuse me – where their headquarters are along with the Big 12, and then you look at the headquarters for the other three conferences, if you kind of see what's going on right now with COVID and the rest of it, those headquarters are centered in areas where everything has been locked down and is still struggling on one side, and the others are – in areas where things have been opened up and people are a little bit more independent-minded in what they want to do and how they want to, take on things. And so I think it's great for the players in the Big Ten that they're coming back, because I think it was going to hurt them from a draft perspective if everybody else played and they didn't. I think his comments about the incredibly poor leadership in the Big Ten are well-founded, and maybe we'll see a change after this year.
Kevin, thanks for the phone call. And here's the thing. I said this to Barrett. I'll say it again. You may think the Big Ten made the right decision. You may think they made the wrong decision. I don't know, with the unknown in this world, what was right, what was wrong. But what I do know what is right and what is wrong is the lack of communication. If the Big Ten thought it wasn't safe, thoroughly explain your explanation. Because when you didn't do that, and we had John Jansen on, who used to play for Michigan, played for Washington's football team. I said to him, if I was a player in the Big Ten, I would want to know why I'm not playing. And to just be told health and safety, that's not a sufficient enough explanation. I need a clear-cut explanation. And when you don't provide someone that, it makes it seem as if they didn't have the answer. So it's all bent out of shape to me that the Big Ten goes from in August, we're not playing, to now in September, we're playing. Why didn't you stick to your decision? And like Barrett said, and I agree with him wholeheartedly, it's all about fear. It's about fear and it's about money. It's about fear about being wrong, and you want to try to make as much money as possible. That's what it is. This testing stuff, it's just the way that they could put it on out there in a vague term and make it look like they're good. Some people will buy it. Most people won't. So, hey, Big Ten, you could have pulled the plug out from the season. You did. That's fine. To change after a month, that part, I don't get. Because nothing really changed all that drastically in the world. Nothing much from August to now where we are in September 16th really has changed all that drastically. So we get Big Ten football back. It will be good. Hopefully we get through the season. There's going to be some hiccups. You know there will be some hiccups. That's just a part of it. And I'm happy that the sport is coming back. But the Big Ten, you could have made the right decision in your mind here, but the failure to explain it and the failure to actually hold firm to your decision, that's weak. It is weak, and there's no doubt about it. Let's get to Odell Beckham. I said yesterday with Odell Beckham, when he says he's all about winning and production, to stop telling me that you're all about winning and producing and just do so. Go on out there, have more than 3 catches, have more than 30 yards, and go win some football games. And the thing I can't stand the most is when you have a player who tells you he's all about winning and producing, and Odell hasn't produced for the last few years, and ever since that injury, he's never been the same player, and he hasn't won anything in this league. Not to compare him directly to Jamal Adams, because Jamal Adams, he ended up leaving a terrible situation for a great situation where he could win. But all Jamal Adams did when he was with the Jets was tell you, I'm about winning, I'm about winning, I'm about changing the culture. And he didn't do any of that with the Jets. And he's a great football player, Jamal Adams. Just like how Odell has the potential to be a great football player too. But it's so obnoxious when you're on a bad team, or when you're not performing well, or the team's not performing well, where a player tries to make it all about him and simply just says, hey, my principles are winning and producing. Well, get through the adversity, win and produce. You got to stop telling me that, and you got to start showing me that. And ever since Odell has been in Cleveland, it does not seem like he's happy. It doesn't. And he wanted out of New York. And sometimes what you wish for isn't actually best for you. Because Odell wanted out. Odell got out. Now, he didn't get to pick where he got to go, but he went to Cleveland. And every so often, last offseason, times during the season last year, this guy becomes such a distraction and such a headache. And this is coming from an Odell fan. And you keep on hearing those rumors of Odell wants out, Odell wants out. Or the Browns want out of the relationship too. And that's the latest today, where Mike Francesa reports that the Browns are interested in trading Odell Beckham Jr. So this marriage, unless if the Browns go to the playoffs this year and have a bunch of success, and even with that, I think this marriage is getting close to a divorce. I'm not saying it's going to happen in the middle of this season before, you know, the October trade deadline, But by this time next year, I'd be surprised if Odell Beckham Jr. was on the Cleveland Browns. And it's a shame because that roster is so talented with Chubb, Hunt, Landry, Odell, Miles Garrett. But for guys like Baker and Odell, I'll even throw Jarvis Landry in that too. You got three guys there that all have good potential. Jarvis has shown some things in the league. Odell has obviously shown some things in the league. Baker had one good year, one bad year. You got to get it together. And like, isn't there some personal pride here? Put your ego, check your ego out the door, and show up and go give Cleveland fans what they deserve. And that's a good football team. Instead, we're going to have a conversation right now. Where's Odell going to get traded to? And if you're a team right now in season, and you could maybe get him at a bargain, I would go trade for Odell Beckham. And I thought of four teams right away. And, you know, part of that equation, I thought of the Steelers and I thought of the Ravens too. The Browns aren't going to trade Odell to the Steelers, the Ravens. So let me throw those two teams out. But four teams that I thought of right away. How about the Pats? Odell supposedly loves Bill Belichick. You throw him with Cam. Cam and Odell did that interview together. I think that would be a very healthy marriage for this year. You had Edelman, Cam, and Odell. That'd be awesome. Philadelphia, they had offensive problems week one. We're up 17-0 and then couldn't score another point. Allowed 27 unanswered too. Banged up wide receivers, Jeffrey, Jalen Reagor, Deshaun another year older, coming off an injury. If I'm Philly, I go pull the trigger for Odell. It's not going to be a first-round pick this time. Now, could you get Odell for a three? Would you give up a two? I don't know, but you may be able to get him for a three. Packers? Would the Packers do so? Would they go get Rodgers a legit another weapon? You had Aaron Jones, Odell, and Davante Adams with then just a complement of MVS and Alan Lazard? Oh, that would be nice. That would be nice for Green Bay. And here's the other team. San Francisco. With the question marks and the health at wide receiver and Deebo Samuels and also Brandon Ayuk, you go get Odell. Now, I don't know how him and Jimmy G would mesh, but you put Odell on the San Francisco 49ers. It's a team that almost won a championship last year that would get stronger, and they've been banged up this year. So those are the four teams I thought of right away that could be realistic situations. 49ers, Pats, Eagles, and the Packers. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We'll be back in 5 minutes when we do return. We update you on all the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. It's a segment called The News Brief. You don't want to miss it. Coming back up in 5 minutes.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.